Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
And welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And the snow and frigid temperatures continue in Boston. And it's not just our moods that are showing some wear and tear.
From those piles of snow on the roofs to the tree trunk-sized icicles hanging from the eaves, across the region, the winter onslaught is also beating up our homes. And did we mention more snow is coming tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. So how can we keep our homes safe and in good repair through this brutal winter? What winter maintenance is actually necessary? What can we do about those dreaded ice dams building up on our roofs? Bruce Irving, the former executive producer of PBS's This Old House and author of the book New England Icons about the area's famous buildings, is with us. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bruce. Good to have you.
Thanks.
And joining us as well is Robert Robillard, carpenter and columnist for the Boston Globe. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
So, listeners, we want to hear from you about how your home is handling, or maybe not, the freeze. If you're wondering about what to do about your roof or how to handle the inevitable flood when spring finally arrives, because all that snow's got to go somewhere, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also, of course, on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
And Robert, I understand that you just got back from shoveling someone's roof off. So really basic question. How do I know if I have too much snow on my roof?
Oh, God. Well, you know, there's a lot of factors to consider if you have too much snow. It's the critical thing is not how much snow, it's the weight of the snow.
Hmm.
And a lot of people think, oh, my goodness, I have so much snow on my roof. But all of the snow that we've had is light and fluffy, which is a good thing.
Right.
That gets really bad if we get some wet snow or maybe rain in the next couple of weeks. So I always go, we go by a rule of thumb, and it's not a hard and set rule. And it depends on the building and the structure that you're in and how well it was built and if it's built to code or if it's 100 years old and rickety. 18 inches or more. And that's basically for low-sloped roofs. So if it's 18 inches or more and you have a low-sloped roof, you should consider trying to remove some of that snow weight.
All right. And the best way to do that is with a roof rake, right? Is that what you would suggest?
Yeah,
or getting a professional one?
I don't want to advocate anybody getting up on a slippery roof. It's dangerous, and you should think twice about it if you're not prepared with proper equipment. Yeah, if you can reach the roof with a roof rake and the telescoping poles that allow you to get that reach, absolutely best way to do it is from the ground. But it's not always realistic.
Right. And so walk us through, so what are our options if it's not realistic to do it from the ground? I mean, for instance, I live on a second and third floor of an old Victorian, and snow is really piling up. I'm actually worried about ice dams up there, but I went up on the very top of the roof, but my mobility was limited. I mean, to do anything safely up there.
Right.
So I just sort of stared at it kind of helplessly and said, yeah, I want to live through this day, and I went back inside.
Anthony, you couldn't will it off with your...
No, it didn't work. I tried. I glared at it with the heat of my eyes. It didn't do anything.
Well, all right. So probably the second safest thing would be to try to snow rake it from a ladder. Again, ladders up against a house that has ice dams, it's very treacherous. And I often advocate, you know, try to use an outrigger, a stabilizer bar on the ladder. And those are those contraptions that painters use to straddle windows. And the reason why I like those is the legs of the stabilizer go on the roof beyond or above the ice dam. So you're not actually in contact with ice. You're embedded into the snow, hopefully touching the roof. That's the first step. Second step is have somebody foot that ladder. And then third step, which I've done many, many times, is I pre-drill a hole and I insert a stainless steel eye bolt on one side of the house where we're going to access it. And we tether the ladder to that eye bolt.
Yeah, that sounds like.
And we leave the eye bolt in place because a lot of times we come back. And so that's the next best step. And then obviously the other step would be to get up on the roof and rake it off. And again, I don't advocate that for homeowners. I've seen a lot of professionals this past week shoveling roofs off without being tethered or having a fall arrest system in place, and it's dangerous up there.
Well, Bruce Irving, former executive producer with This Old House, there are a lot of old houses around here. How's your place weathering the storm?
Oh, my secret is that I live in a 17-year-old house.
Oh, you do?
What, do you think I'm crazy?
Smart man.
Well, I live in a condo building. The building itself was constructed roughly 1920-ish, okay. So not that old in New England standards. Flat roof, though. We have a flat rubber roof and an ice dam at the top of it, and we've had leaking in our kitchen, and it's basically raining in the unit below us because something's coming through the masonry, we think. We don't know. But I guess I'm just curious. It's not that we've just had one big weather event. You know, we're going to have freeze-thaw, maybe more snow, et cetera. Like, is it something people can keep up with, keep clearing snow off? Like, what do we do? Do we just suffer for a prolonged period of time?
The problem, of course, is that you've got a ton of water on the roof looking for a place to go. And it can come all at once or it can come in pieces. But when it gets heated, either from the outside, from the rays of the sun that then penetrate down and bounce off the asphalt or whatever's dark under there and melts it, or from the inside, from the heat of the building, that stuff is turning into liquid, finding its way to the edge, hitting cold and freezing, turning into a big bump.
Right.
And still comes the liquid water with no place to go after.
This is exactly what's happening in our place. We've got radiators that are basically right up against old brick.
Yeah.
And so it's melting the ice.
A heat pump.
Yeah. Sounds like a season of prolonged suffering and wetness inside my kitchen.
Well, that's a big deal. I mean, this is going to go on for a long time. And we were talking earlier about what about the stuff on the ground when that melts. But that's a different topic. The problem is that...
We'll have you back in the spring.
I'll bring my canoe. But the problem that, you know, this is, of course, lighting up the social networks. And everyone wants to know what to do about these dams. And the problem is that there's really a limited menu. And I'm sure Robert will agree with me on this, that once it starts, once the physics and conditions are in place, other than getting out there, which is a very dangerous undertaking, it's an ongoing issue, an ongoing problem that's almost impossible to fix.
So is there anything? I mean, what about drilling through the dams just to create a little bit of a place for the water to run through?
Well, sure. If you could figure out a way to remove the physical dam itself, some of that backed up water might find its way down through. But this brings us back to what Robert was talking about. How do you get up there?
Right.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
So there are... I know we talked about this earlier, the pantyhose trick. And I did a little – I've never done this myself. I want to go on record. If people have been looking around, there is this ploy by which a leg of a pantyhose is filled with calcium chloride, not sodium chloride, calcium, and laid perpendicularly across the dam. And it can, in certain conditions, eat its way down to forming a channel for the backed up water to get through. Anecdotally, I've heard it does work.
I've done it.
And?
It works.
It does, okay.
I cut the channels first.
Mm-hmm.
I put the
nylon channel
in the channel to keep the channel open. Additionally, you can use wire mesh, nylon window screening.
Mm-hmm.
Not the metal stuff, the nylon stuff. And I've even heard people use, I'm not sure if this is the right word, thistle bags.
Like holding suet?
So, Robert, just to be absolutely clear, so this is for an existing ice dam, you cut some channels and then you lay this essentially tube of calcium chloride across the ice dam and it melts the ice dam?
Well, you lay it in the channel basically to keep the channel open. Otherwise, you have to keep going up there and cutting it open.
I guess my question now is, Robert, how do I get you to come out to my house? I think roofers are really busy folks right now.
A lot of busy people.
And, you know, you have to be really careful because there's a lot of gouging. I'm hearing crazy stories. And everybody that calls me that I can't service, I tell them, call somebody who you use on a regular basis, a carpenter, a painter, a roofer, a contractor who has some gear and some training to be up high. And call someone who you trust who's going to work for you again, not someone who's going to run to the bank and cash the check.
Yeah, because I've heard stories, there are people out there charging $100 an hour and up for this kind of work. More than that, yeah. Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, here's another another potential hazard, and that is carbon monoxide backing up and causing problems. We've heard a bunch of reports recently about that. Bruce, I'll come back to you. What do we need to keep in mind to avoid that?
Well, this is something you can do, because the problem is that there are a couple of appliances in your house that can their combustion gas needs a place to get out. That would be a gas dryer or one of the modern high-efficiency boilers or furnaces that side vent out of the house. Both of those vents are low enough to the ground that they could become, obstructed by snow. That's a thing you can pretty much do on your feet on the ground.
Right. And it's important, obviously.
Yeah.
Can I add something to that?
Sure, Robert.
I build these for my clients, and people can do this on their own. It's super simple. You have a lumber yard cut you some plywood, say 2 feet by 4 feet, two pieces. You buy two strap hinges, some barn strap hinges, and you screw them together, and you make an A-frame. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get technical, you could run a chain across the two so the A-frame doesn't split open like a split, and you put it in front of that vent, and you're pretty well insured. You've probably seen these protecting shrubs in front of some decorative houses. You're pretty well insured of keeping that vent open during a snowstorm, and then you should go out, like Bruce said, and trample down in front of it. But that's a good way to keep it going overnight.
Hmm. Well, Bruce, let me ask you, I'm still tickled that you live in a 17-year-old house. it seems like we're in the season we're in now, and so damage mitigation may be where everyone's minds are. But is this not like a call to also think about how to prevent ice dams from happening next winter? Insulation, maybe this is a time for people to think about we should better insulate our attics.
Yes, there's going to be a lot of very busy roofers next summer, I think. And the goal to keep in mind is you're trying to make that roof plane as cold as possible, whether it be from insulating from the heat that's rising up from the building out, so that means insulating the joist bays, or separating the shingles from the rest of the roof. One of the things that I heard from a good friend of mine who's a contractor in Cambridge is they like to put 2 or 3 inches of rigid insulation on top of the roof plane and then roof over that. Now, that's a big deal, because you can imagine it requires all sorts of carpentry to fix the eave and soffit and roof rake lines. Mm-hmm. But that gives you a cold roof. That's one thing. And then
sounds
there's
like a cold, hard cast.
There's going to be, but when you think of the water coming into your building right now, wouldn't you pay a lot to make that not be happening? A more standardized thing, and that I was surprised to find, and Robert, you may know better than I do, this is not building code, but it certainly is good building practice, and that's the placement of something called ice and water shield for the first 3 to 5 feet up from the edge of your roof.
It's absolutely
a sticky, asphalty kind of membrane that acts almost like a pool liner underneath your shingles, and it seals every penetration like a roof nail or anything. So should the liquid water start backing up under your shingles, at least it won't find easy holes to get down through. Now, that's something that can be done just from a simple re-roofing if you don't have it up there already.
Right. Re-roofing. Money. Or you could save the money and move to Florida.
No, we don't want a brain drain.
No, I agree.
Stay here, everyone.
No, we've got to stay here. It's worth it. It's worth the pain. Spring is right around the corner. Bruce Irving, former executive producer of PBS's This Old House, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
And Robert Robillard is a carpenter in Concord and columnist at the Boston Globe. Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Well, listeners, stick with us, because maybe you're not going outside anyway with all this terrible weather. But we're going to be talking about the life of Edwin Land, scientist and inventor of the Polaroid. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.